Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Janine's mom was standing in the front hall, tapping her keys impatiently on her purse. "Please get moving," she called up the stairs. "You're going to be late for violin." 10-year-old Janine came slowly and heavily down the stairs, dragging her violin case behind her. "Do I have to go today? I can't find my music, so Mrs. Connor will be mad." Then she perked up. "How about if I go tomorrow?" Janine's mom was at the end of her rope. "You can't go tomorrow. Tomorrow you have scouts and then soccer practice. You really have to get yourself organized, young lady." Janine sat down on the bottom step. "I wish I didn't have to do anything," she whimpered. From a parent's perspective, when it comes to our children's outside activities, how much is too much? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today's guest can help us evaluate the opportunities open to our children and how to handle them. Dr. Ted Feinberg has been a school psychologist for 30 years and is now Assistant Executive Director of the National Association of School Psychologists. He has three grown children, twin sons, and a daughter. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Feinberg.
Thank you very much.
What's the biggest mistake parents make when they want to provide outside activities for kids?
I think one of the major mistakes that parents make is not taking some time to sit down with their children and find out what their children are interested in or might like to get involved with. There is a presumption on the part of parents that they know what their children should be involved with, or worse, that they somehow feel that their children have to be in the same types of activities with the family down the block and the family around the corner, kind of eliminating the child's input, and I think that's a classic error.
Of course, I'm sure carpooling drives a lot of this.
Well, it probably does in many communities, and you know, one of the things that I think is important for your listenership to consider is that convenience to the adults shouldn't be the only factor in terms of getting children involved with activities. The central need, I believe, is that of the child, and the parents need to find ways to accommodate to the needs and the desires of the child, first and foremost.
Now, when we're talking about the needs of the child and so on, what age is sort of the beginning age for these outside activities that we're talking about?
Well, I think that is a function of a number of factors. I think it's a function of the developmental readiness of a child. Oftentimes, for instance, parents would ask me, is there a child ready for this, or is there a child ready for that activity? And really, it's a function of you as a parent, if you do your job well and you know your child, to make a judgment about the child's maturity factor, their attention to task ability, their ability to separate from you as a parent, and what the activity is. Certainly, if it's a unstructured, relaxed play activity for many young children, that's quite appropriate. My concern is that sometimes parents want to get their children into activities that exceed their developmental readiness to handle those activities. And then they wonder why the child balks or is frustrated or manifests problems at that site. It's just not a good fit for the child in that setting. But certainly there are many age-appropriate activities, playgroup activities, to help entree that child into a socialization situation that don't place a high degree of stress and task completion on the child. It's just fun.
What kinds of age ranges would you put for that particular kind of activity?
Well, I have seen children as young as three adapt very well to play school and similar kinds of activities. I've seen children who come into the public schools at age six who are not ready to be in school because they've not had some of the prerequisite experiences, play experiences, exposure to other children experiences to allow them to be ready for the formal educational experience. That being said, I recommend very, very infrequently that children be kept home from entrance into school because I think part of what I believe kindergarten is intended to do is to aid in the socialization experience for children. And frankly, if you don't have an opportunity to go to kindergarten, you know, what's the sense of being around? I mean, it's one of the treats of life, being in kindergarten.
It sounds like you're on a different wavelength than a lot of the public school systems who feel that kindergarten really is the time to get going on alphabet and arithmetic and all kinds of academic stuff.
And that's very unfortunate, because I think what has happened is that maybe similar to what our entire society has become, and that is time accelerated, and we're trying to accelerate life's experiences well before they should be in place in a child's life. And so where kindergarten 20 or 25 years ago was an opportunity for children to come to school, to learn their colors, to learn their numbers, their shapes, to learn how not to eat paste.
and crayons.
Now the curricular expectations for kindergarten youngsters is what would probably have been expected for children in first or maybe second grade 25 years ago.
And the idea is that the human development is the same, but our expectations have changed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think to some extent, either because of the pressures exerted by school systems or parents, there is this rush to kind of cram into children, maybe before they're ready, a body of cognitive information that I think doesn't necessarily bode well for many children who need the opportunity to play, to interact, to gain some of the, again, prerequisite experiences that allow for subsequent learning to take place. We take that away from children, and I think we run the risk of engendering all kinds of both academic and emotional difficulties. One of the stories that I share with many people who I have an opportunity to talk with was an experience that I had as a psychologist in an upstate New York school system, where every year, every March, we would conduct preschool screening. Now, preschool screening is pretty much standard in many communities around the country. And the purpose of it is to take a look at incoming kindergartners to see, one, if there are any youngsters who have handicapping conditions that need special education support, and to look at the other end of the continuum, those children who are coming in with gifted and talented potential, because we want to make provisions for them as well. Generally speaking, it's a light and easy experience, or at least it's supposed to be for children. They come, they meet with the speech therapist, with school psychologist, with the nurse, and they go through a variety of stations to check out their functional levels. I can recall one year a very anxious mother coming up to me 3 or 4 days before the screening for her child, wanting to know if she could have a copy of the preschool screening test. When I inquired as to why she needed that, she wanted to spend time with her child, preparing her child so that the child would do the very best that she could do on that test.
Oh, that's so sad.
And she said it with great earnestness and with great sincerity and with great feeling that if she did not do this, somehow she would be remiss as a parent. And when I helped her understand that we were screening her child for kindergarten, not for college, she I'm not sure she saw the humor in that, but we were trying to lighten it up a little. There's a fair degree of competitiveness in certainly some school districts, and whether that's born of the school's orientation to want to have as many of their graduates going to prestigious colleges, or whether it's a reflection of the community sentiment, the parents in that community, the net result is it puts a fair degree of pressure on children to perform, and that sometimes is not productive.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of how much is too much.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. Ted Feinberg about how much is too much. I guess one of the things that we're touching on here a little bit is the fact that parents could be apt to put their kids in outside activities that are very demanding of skill acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit in terms of development, child development levels?
I can give you a very good example of that. In the community where we raised our children, it's a suburban community in New York, and in this community, the sport of choice for anyone who was interested in being a part of that community was soccer. And there must have been 5,000 children in the community involved at various stages of soccer. I think when we introduced our sons to soccer, they were 5 years old. Now, I think at that time, if I can recall correctly, their shorts were larger than,
the legs.
The shorts were dresses.
And oftentimes, they forgot which goal they were defending. And it was wonderful, and it was fun for them. It was fun for us as parents. Not too long after that, the competitive piece kicked in what I call the Little League mentality, where parents were placing unbelievable pressure on their little ones to perform at a level that they clearly were not able to do. And it took sometimes comments from the coach and sometimes comments from those of us on the sidelines who were more child-centered than soccer-centered to make sure that people didn't lose perspective, that this was a recreational soccer league and that these children, first and foremost, were there to have some fun, to have some exercise, to be out in the fresh air. And whether they scored a goal or not, it was incidental. But what I think happens is that the competitiveness that some parents feel, or the sense that they place themselves, they live vicariously through their children, they misunderstand that the purpose for the child to be there is to be out on the field, to have fun, to maybe score a goal, maybe not, to learn the value of working as a team, to be able to follow directions from the coach. All too often, I think what happens is that that gets lost in the shuffle.
Dr. Feinberg, how can we tell if a child is overloaded with too many activities? What kind of signs might we see in our kids?
Good question, and I think I would certainly suggest that parents remain alert to these signs and symptoms, because to miss those signs, I think, is to do a disservice to the child. But certainly, if you see an otherwise compliant child exhibiting high emotionality, refusal to go to the activity, loss of interest, somatic complaints, you know, all of a sudden the child is developing headaches, stomach aches, their back hurts, their feet hurt, looking anxious, nervous, or stressed. I mean, children are typically not good at masking these signs and symptoms. And when parents see these, they should not read them solely as being oppositional in intent, but that they are symptomatic, or may be symptomatic, that either the number of activities that the child is involved with or the particular activity is just not a good fit for that child. Mm-hmm. I think, again, it's very important for parents and children to maintain open and honest communication. And so maybe you've paid, $100 to have your child involved in a particular activity, so you feel a certain financial investment. Or maybe you have a strong belief that if you start something, you're supposed to finish it. You know, that's a cliche that we hear often from parents. But if your concern is primarily for the emotional well-being of your child, take some time, sit down with the child, find out what it is that is troubling them, and see if you can problem solve with the child ways to meet some of your needs, but of course, meeting the needs of the child is foremost.
Keeping the purpose of the activities in the forefront seems
Absolutely.
To be the most important thing to remember.
Absolutely. And what is so important that it's worth sacrificing a child's emotional health and their sense of happiness? I don't think there are too many things that warrant that.
Many parents contend that if their kids don't have structured activities after school, then they'll just waste their free time. How do you feel about that?
That's a great question, and I think my response is this, that, you know, we live in such a busy, active world, and I'd like to cite a personal experience that occurred with my daughter. I was driving her back and forth from a multitude of activities that she had elected to get involved with. And I said to her after a while, I was kind of tired that particular day. And I said, don't you think you're doing too much? And she said, Dad, I'm doing what you and Mom do all the time.
Oh, my goodness.
Talk about food for thought and talk about passing on, inadvertently, I believe, a message to our children that they have to stay busy and active all the time. I think in my particular case, that caused me to step back and think, we need to have time, all of us, to think, to daydream, to ponder, to just do nothing, that is restorative, that it's healthy. And somehow in this culture where we believe that unless we are productive all of the time, somehow we are missing the boat, I think we need to reframe that and help people understand that there's something very valuable in taking time to just rest body and mind, at least portions of each day.
In our research on creativity a while back, one of the things we found was that the most creative people said that they were allowed to have time alone in order to do the thinking that was needed to do their creative work.
I'm concerned that somehow we are kind of eliminating children's capacity to imagine things. Mm-hmm. And if we structure life so tightly that you don't have an opportunity to think about whatever might pop into your mind of a creative nature or of an imaginative nature, you know, I think a very important part of why life is valuable gets put by the wayside.
We wrote a whole chapter on that when we wrote Parents as Mentors. One chapter is called Alone Time because we felt very strongly about it, too.
Yep.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of how much is too much.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today, we are talking with Dr. Ted Feinberg about how much is too much.
A lot of parents who are highly structured feel that a structured schedule will teach their children how to be organized and sort of internalize that kind of organizational skill building. What do you say to them?
I would say to them that if they are type A personalities, do they want to instill that in their children? And I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek. Type A personalities are very productive people, but at a cost. And do we want to have children who at very tender ages are feeling anxious about a lack of production, who are feeling somehow if they just step back and want to take a deep breath that they're disappointing parents or disappointing their teachers? My sense would be careful what you ask for, because sometimes what you get is not really what you want, and parents need to be alert to that.
How would you handle a child, like you mentioned, your daughter was really overloaded by your estimation? How do you handle that situation when the child wants to overload her own schedule?
And many children, just so that your listenership doesn't walk away feeling unduly guilty about their role as parents, very often bright, creative, talented children are so energized by life's experiences that they just don't know. But it's kind of comparable to, would you allow your child to load up a plate with more than they could eat? No, because they would get sick. They would suffer some sort of distress. I think it's important for parents to take the time to sit down with their child and understand with the child how many things are reasonable to get done. And are we talking about running through activities or taking a couple of activities and doing them with gusto and with follow through that they can be proud of? Sometimes children, you know, are just, they'll run till they drop. I can remember one of my sons, you had to kind of get him to stop. And once he stopped, he just fell right asleep. But there's a difference between relaxing and collapsing. And I think helping children understand that We want them to be involved. There are lots of wonderful things in life to participate in and to get involved with, and that it's important to pick a few, do them well, do them so that you have a sense of enjoyment and not feel that you have to put everything on the plate.
Now, what about the child who doesn't want to venture out beyond school at all? That's the opposite type, who just couldn't possibly put a foot out the door.
And I think it's important to know your child. Over the years, I've worked with some children who are just not interested in sports. Their parents want them desperately to get involved with sports. The child is not interested. And that's okay. Not everybody is interested in everything. The flip side of that is, as a parent, if you are in touch with your child and you know that your child is a bit shy or a bit reluctant to get involved with activities that you think might help them grow and blossom, it's kind of like the no thank you portion of when you're trying to get your child to eat broccoli or cauliflower or whatever. You ask them, you put a very little bit of that on their plate and you ask them to taste it. If they don't like it after two spoonfuls, then they have the option to say no thank you. But I think the same concept applies with activities. Getting children to taste of certain activities that they might not normally act upon gives them an opportunity to taste, and they may surprise themselves and find that they really like the activity.
Is it a good move to have parents with that kind of a child suggest that the child do this activity with a friend so that it's a little more comforting?
That is often very helpful, to pick a pal to do the activity with, take some of the fearfulness. Oftentimes, this kind of issue exists when parents contemplate sending their children to camp. Many children are very fearful of leaving home. But if they're going away with a sibling or going away with a friend, then the trepidation and the fearfulness kind of dissipates.
I would guess you could also say, why don't you try it three times and let's see how you feel after the third time.
And let's talk about it. Let's see how you feel. We're not going to lock you into it, but fairness dictates that you at least give it a try.
But they're not bound to it for life, and they need to know that.
No contracts will be signed.
Right. What resources would you recommend for parents who are trying to decide among all the enormous choices available for their children?
Well, there are lots of resources in every community in the country. Certainly one of the prime resources would be the school that your child goes to. Teachers, administrators often know of activities that are going on, both school-sponsored and community-sponsored, that are age-appropriate and that have a track record of doing quality work with children. In those communities that have groups like the YMCA, that they offer activities for children after school, and they're usually very well run and supervised and have wonderful physical resources at those settings. Talking with neighbors about community resources, music classes, dance classes, talking with coaches who teach children at young ages various introduction to sports, I think would be an opportunity. Checking the community news in your vicinity to see what is available, and then going out and seeing how those programs are run, making sure that the primary focus is fun for the child, and that there's an entry-level opportunity for the child, and there isn't an excessive amount of competitive themes. I think where we're talking about entry-level activities, that there should be the expectation on the part of the child and the parents that this is an exposure opportunity. It is not a skill set implied in that activity, that the child, if the activity is done well, it is done with an awareness that the child needs to first and foremost enjoy the activity, that it's not overly competitive, and that the implicit value and interest of that activity is really what draws the child to it. And if you establish that kind of foundation, then the likelihood that the child will stay with that activity, I think, is higher. If you make it too much of a pressure situation, the child will probably balk at it somewhere along the way.
Do you have a website or a phone number where people could send for information that might be helpful?
Absolutely. And I should tell you that our website, 80% of the hits on our website are from parents. around the country. And our website is www.naspweb.org.
Can you spell that?
Yes.
We know the W part. We know the W's.
NASPweb.org. Okay. And our phone number is 301-657-0270.
And you want to repeat that for everyone running for a pencil?
301-657-0270.
That's the National Association of School Psychologists.
Correct.
Okay. Our special thanks to Dr. Ted Feinberg for giving us some new insights to use in helping our children make choices and plan their activities. Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. And tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.